SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two of a Football Friday Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid all across the Spiz Grizz Network. I am Ben Stevens. He is Donnie Wrightside. Two more hours to go up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time, live right here on this Football Friday all across the grid. Donnie, let's keep it moving here with what many would consider a bottom feeder battle in Chicago at Soldier Field on Sunday. It's the Bears and the Vikings, with Chicago a 3-point home underdog. Of course, for the Vikes, they will play in this football game and at least the next few after without Justin Jefferson, the outstanding wide receiver. What changes are coming for Minnesota? We'll find out, DRS, in the next few weeks. But first off, it is Sunday. The Vikings and the Bears, Donnie, the two worst teams in the NFC North, both just 1-4 this year. Chicago has had that mini bye. They won outright on the road last Thursday as a 6.5-point underdog against the Commanders. The Vikings victorious two Sundays ago against the Carolina Panthers, the only remaining winless team in the National Football League. So, Donnie, two 1-4 teams, who gets win number two of the year?
Yeah, Chicago's going to get this win. And quite frankly, I just can't figure out that it's like, oh, we can't put Chicago as a favorite. That would be ridiculous, even though right. I think they're the better team. Minnesota being a minus 3-point road favorite here, kind of equally ridiculous to me. Dome team going outdoors, 50-degree temperatures, rain in the forecast, and some windy conditions. And oh, yeah, you're down the best player on your football team by a wide margin in Justin Jefferson. Look, I like Kirk Cousins. He's a solid quarterback. He's probably going to pick up some statistics in this game. But I like the way Chicago played on offense back-to-back weeks here. They are at home in this football game. They're rested from that mini bye. And quite frankly, I don't think Minnesota is that good of a football team. Give me the 3 points. And quite frankly, I think the Chicago Bears are going to win outright as we welcome in the radio audience here to Football Friday here on the Sports Grid Network, Sirius XM channel 159. Donnie Wrightside and Ben Stevens here carrying you through over the next 2 hours as we ramp you up for the weekend. But yeah, Chicago is going to win this football game for me, Ben.
Yeah, DRS, if it's not for that weather, by the way, I think we see a lot of points in Chicago on Sunday. Of course, we know the Bears still struggle to stop anybody from finding the end zone, and Minnesota hasn't been great offensively or defensively, I should say, this year. The Bears have played all five of their games to an over so far. I still think Kirk is going to air it out, depending on the wind in the Windy City on Sunday. The Bears are the second-worst passing defense in the National Football League, giving up 286 yards. But if Donnie is correct, keep an eye on the Bears, by the way. They host the Vikings this weekend and then the Raiders the following weekend. Of course, Las Vegas is 2-3. Not necessarily the most stellar football team we have seen in 2023. Could the Bears be 3-4 by the time we end week number seven? Maybe, just maybe. And Donnie, we love football. We are never going to disparage football or an NFL Sunday slate where we can sit on our couch, where we can wager and make great bets following Pro Football Today with Donnie Wrightside, Joe Lisi, and of course, Kevin Walsh. But the Sunday slate this week, Donnie, not as great as weeks past, and that's kind of encapsulated on Sunday Night Football in Western New York. The Buffalo Bills host the New York Giants. The Giants, for a second consecutive day, pretty much have their entire offense on the injury report and not practicing, although Saquon Barkley should be back. It's north of a 2-touchdown spread, Donnie, now in favor of the Bills. We are not expecting the most competitive Sunday Night Football game in Orchard Park in just a few days.
Nope, this game can be called melatonin because you'll be able to get to sleep early and get a good rest for all the playoff baseball that's going to be coming the following week. And also, quite frankly, a pretty good Monday Night Football game shaping up between Dallas and the Los Angeles Chargers. But having said, Buffalo should win this game easy. I look at that total at 44.5 and I say to myself, typically look at these two teams. I'm going way over because it's the Buffalo Bills. But I look at the Bills going, let's get to 17 points, not get any more injuries that we've faced also in the past week over in London, and let's just walk away with an easy win. What do the Giants have to play for in this game, other than everybody still being hurt on their football team? And also, are we rushing Daniel Jones back? For what? Are we rushing, you know, your superstar running back Saquon Barkley back in this game? For what? Your offensive line is an absolute sieve. So you're going to put two injured guys behind that offensive line and perform here? As far as I'm concerned, I look at that 14.5-point line. It should be 21.5 as if it's college football, because you're getting a Division III football team and the New York Giants going up against a legitimate offensive contender here and maybe a chance to win the AFC in Buffalo. It's a bad football game, but maybe a good prop game here if you're looking from a Buffalo Bills side. Like, I don't know, Stephon Diggs. Yeah, he's going to eat.
James Cook against a terrible New York Giants rushing defense? Yeah, I think so as well. And Buffalo's not entering this game riding high or thinking they're all high and mighty. They're coming off a disappointing effort last week in London against the Jaguars. I think the Bills put up their points, name their number, go out there and get it on Sunday. And again, we're not sure if Daniel Jones is going to play. The neck injury that sidelined him early last week against the Dolphins. It doesn't really matter who's out there offensively for the Giants at this moment, because the offensive line is so miserably banged up, they can't even run an offensive scheme that they would desire. Yeah, it's not necessarily going to be a close and competitive game on Sunday night in Buffalo. Not expected to be a competitive game, DRS, on Sunday in Miami. The Finns, a 13.5-point favorite against the only winless team left in the National Football League. It's the Carolina Panthers, who have the fifth worst scoring defense. They give up nearly 29 points per game. They've allowed 20 or more points in all five games. They've been booked as an underdog, Donnie, in all five as well for Carolina. They're one of three teams alongside the Giants and the Broncos that has failed to cover a number this year, 0-4-1 against the spread. And Donnie, that's the thing, right? You're breaking in the number one overall pick. The rookie's going to take some of his lumps, although he has looked like the worst of the three rookie quarterbacks behind Anthony Richardson, who's even behind CJ Stroud. But you hope Carolina can be competitive. So far, not the case. Can they cover as a 13.5-point dog in Miami?
I mean, you should be able to. The line opened up, actually, at the FanDuel Sportsbook here, Ben, 10.5, and quickly rose to 13.5. I don't know if we're going to get to 14, because that's a big number in professional sports, particularly in football, but it just might. And is there anybody out there going like, yeah, sure, because the way you're trying to line this game up is, I don't know if Carolina's going to be competitive all the way through, right? Where it's like, hey, single possession game through four quarters. It's one of those where you have to put yourself and say, could this be one of those Denver Broncos games where, I'm not saying 70 points get hung on the Carolina Panthers, but let's just say high 30s. Do you really think that the Carolina Panthers can get into the mid to high 20s in this football game? Because I don't. When you're getting 13.5 points, you're not looking for the outright win. All you're saying to yourself is, if I'm down 20 points late in the fourth quarter, can my quarterback and that offense deliver a cheap touchdown? And I'm not so sure that they can. It's wild when you think about it, like Gardner Minshew getting the start here for the Colts. You know it's going to be competent. If Andy Dalton got the start here for Carolina, like, hey, you know what? I'll buy into that. And a half. It's a shame the number one overall pick we're not getting that confidence from yet, but that's a Frank Reich problem right now. This team just hasn't looked good to open up the season here at all, Ben.
Donnie, if Andy Dalton was playing, the line probably wouldn't be 13.5. It might be 12. We've seen the line work in Dalton's favor when he was either going to be the starter in Seattle or it was thought he might start in place for Bryce Young. We'll set up the Major League Baseball weekend. The championship series begins. That's next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
For the first time in postseason history, a matchup in the National League Championship Series between the Diamondbacks and the Phillies. Arizona and Philadelphia have never faced off in October baseball. They will do so in 2023 with a National League pennant at stake. DRS Philadelphia now has home field advantage. For the second consecutive year, it's a matchup for the pennant between two wild card teams. The Phils remain the same, and it's another wild card team from the National League West. Philly, the 4 seed in the NL playoff bracket. The Diamondbacks, the 6th and final. Philadelphia, Donnie, is going to hold home field advantage for this National League Championship Series, something the Phils probably did not expect at any point in this October run. Minus 166, Donnie, is that price on Philly to win the pennant for a second consecutive year and get back to a World Series. Those are the odds for game number one.
Yes, and also, they should be able to get back. They're the better team than the Diamondbacks, but the Diamondbacks are red hot, man. Diamondbacks swept Milwaukee, who I thought might have had the best overall pitching staff heading into the playoffs, and the mighty Dodgers in that big payroll handle them fairly easily. Let's also take a look down the line, Ben, at the World Series and find out what could be interesting here. And that's talking about home playoff advantages here and who has home field advantage. If we take a look at the Philadelphia Phillies, who have home field advantage against the Diamondbacks, the Astros have it against the Rangers here. If we look at the World Series here, let's just say the Diamondbacks beat the Phillies. Either team, the Astros or the Rangers, are going to have home field advantage because they both won 90 games. But how about this? The Phillies, Rangers, and the Astros all won 90 games apiece here. If the Phillies advance to the World Series and play the Astros, they hold the tiebreaker over the Astros, so the Philadelphia will be home to the Astros. But if we take a look at the Rangers, the Rangers actually hold home field over the Philadelphia Phillies if they advance, and that's the World Series. The reason I'm bringing it up is it actually goes back to early season situations. The Phillies had a 2-1 series against the Astros. Therefore, that was their tiebreaker. The first series of the season, the Texas Rangers swept the Philadelphia Phillies. That's why they would have the tiebreaker advantage. It's kind of crazy. Three teams here out of the four left all had 90 wins. That's how it breaks down here. So if you're looking from a Phillies perspective, do you want to take on the Astros again? Well, they beat you last year, but you have home field advantage. Or would you rather take a chance here with the Texas Rangers? And then also from the American League perspective, Rangers and the Astros, yeah, they'd rather see the ad. The Diamondbacks, why? It doesn't matter. They would both be home at that point. But I'm excited for the series to get underway, and I do believe the Phillies should be favored in game one and games and for the entire series itself here.
The Fighting Phils minus 166, Donnie, to win this series outright in their second consecutive National League pennant. Philadelphia, at the moment, the second best price to win the World Series, plus 195, only 15 cents behind the Astros, who are the favorites at plus 180. We like looking at the correct score market as well. Who wins now in a best of seven, and how long does it take? The shortest price, Donnie, is Philadelphia in six. That's plus 390. Philly in seven is plus 410. Even Philly in five at plus 520 is shorter than any of the outcomes that would favor Arizona. And DRS, when you look at Philadelphia in this matchup, game number one now is not until Monday. So here we are, rest again for two teams that have been on a roll in this postseason. Donnie, Arizona is a perfect 5-0. Arizona has won all four of their games on the road in this postseason. So not scared of flying out east to the bank to take on Philadelphia. And we expect in game number one it to be a matchup of two of the best pitchers from the starting staffs of both teams. We expect it to be Merrill Kelly for Arizona. Zach Wheeler should get the nod for Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's going to be great matchups, and this is what you want to, right? Hey, well, I'm sure, put it this way here. I'm sure the Phillies would like to throw Suarez game one and have fought again in game one for Arizona. No, you knuckleheads here. You want your best pitchers going, which is why rest is a big advantage, so you can have your A lineups in against the other team's A lineups as it goes along here. I do think the Phillies would have the advantage here, even if it's Merrill Kelly or Zach Allen. You're going to have Nola and Wheeler have been sensational amongst themselves here in the postseason, and maybe the series comes down to the third pitcher who fought has been absolutely sensational in the playoffs, and so is Ranger Suarez. So is it really that big of an advantage here? And also keep in mind on this, so many times in playoff formats and series, what are we used to here, right? Two games here, two games here, one in the other building, or a seven game series, Ben. 2-2, 1-1-1. That's not the case in here, and it actually gives you a nice advantage, or I should say not as much of an advantage here for the home team, because you go 2 in Philadelphia but 3 in Arizona. So in a Major League Baseball game, look, it's hard to sweep. Same thing we talk about a doubleheader in a single day, just get the 1-1. Or the Phillies looking to go 1-1 at home here before they go back to Arizona? No, they're not. But let's just say they do. There's a chance that you might not make it back to Philadelphia. So your advantage as that road team is here. Boy, if you can steal game number one in Philadelphia and all that pressure mounts on Philadelphia, you go down 0-2 as the Phillies, you're not coming back to Philadelphia at that point. So there is a difference there, and it's nice to point those things out before the series starts. Like, oh, I didn't know game five was still going to be out in Arizona. Yes, it's 2-3-2 in this format now.
Yeah, we got a little bit of time before Monday night. Again, minus 158 already in favor of Philly. The total is 7.5. Bryce Harper, Donnie, with all the narratives that have surrounded one of the best postseason performers in the last half decade in Major League Baseball, he's a plus 390 favorite. Harper himself to win the National League Championship Series MVP award. He is half the price of everybody else. Corbin Carroll, who's going to win National League Rookie of the Year for the D-backs this year, the second shortest number at 8-1. Now, the Texas tussle, the in-state showdown with an American League pennant on the line. It's the Astros and the Rangers. Houston has home field advantage. And why does Houston have home field advantage, Donnie? The two teams had the same record, 90-72. But because the Astros won 9 of 13 against Texas throughout the regular season, they had the divisional tiebreaker that came down to 162 the final day of the MLB regular season. The Rangers dropped 3 of 4 in their final weekend set against Seattle. Houston swept Arizona, winning that third and final game to take the American League West divisional championship. And because of that, the Astros will host the Rangers and the Astros, Donnie, in their seventh consecutive ALCS, a minus 158 favorite to get to the World Series. Again, that's game number one.
Yes, and I do think we're going to have a fantastic series there. You talking about primetime performers on both sides there. We're not looking at this series saying, oh, there's a decided underdog on one side. Forget about what the odds even say. If you are going to get pitching for the Texas Rangers of what we've already saw through the wild card round and the divisional series, they're going to be every bit as good as the Houston Astros here. And you can almost argue, Eovaldi is pitching like an ace, what we thought he was over the first half of the season. You're getting Montgomery at the deadline. He is pitching like an ace here. And you're piecemealing the rest of together with a bullpen, because when you look at the Houston Astros, it used to be in the past they had four legitimate starters here. Now they only have two, and it's Verlander going to take the mound in game number one. You need to win game number one, because if you can get off, there's that 1-0 victory here. It'll be interesting to see how the pitching matchups do, because we don't have those true frontline starters. I love Valdez last year. Maybe he's not as good as he was last year. Christian Javier, who was sensational his last start, he didn't pitch all that well this year. Maybe a more offensive series that we anticipate than maybe even the Phillies and the Diamondbacks, because we know 1-2-1-2, it's going to be sensational theater in Philadelphia. Let's see what happens here in Texas Houston in game number one. If you want to win that series, if you're Texas, go beat Verlander in his own building here and you'll be in the pilot's chair.
Donnie, we already said that Sunday night football might be known as melatonin. It's a 14.5 point spread in favor of Buffalo against the New York Giants. Well, at the same time, it is the opening game of the American League Championship Series, 8:15 p.m. Eastern time, scheduled first pitch on Sunday night. And as we look at the American League Championship Series MVP, Yordan Alvarez, Donnie, who had four home runs in the four games they played against Minnesota in the ALDS, is the favorite at plus 550, but keep an eye on Corey Seager. Donnie, if it wasn't for Shohei Ohtani, Seager might be the front runner for the MVP award in the American League.
Yes, he would be. He's having a fantastic season, also playoff run. You're going to have to pitch around that guy because he will do damage. Can't wait for the next round of the playoffs to begin here.
There is the tail of the tape between the two Texas teams battling it out for an AL pennant starting on Sunday night. College football, the Saturday slate, next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We're already at the halfway point of this 2023 college football season, so every Saturday from here on out becomes even more significant. We'll go all around week number 7 of this college football campaign, but we start in the Southeastern Conference. Welcome back to this Football Friday, live right here on TEL. I'm Ben. Donnie is here. So too is Mark Zeno. He's the mouth in the South. Zeno, thank you for joining us here on this Friday.
Guys, there's nowhere I'd rather be. And you almost made me sad, Ben, knowing that we hit the halfway point of the college season.
I know.
Don't do that to me.
Crazy.
Don't do that to me. I'm in full gold right now.
It's crazy, Zeno. All of a sudden, we were talking week zero, breaking down UTEP and Jacksonville State, and now here we are at week number seven in the thick of conference play with so much still, though, left on the horizon, week seven and beyond. So, Zeno, we start in the SEC. You are the mouth in the South, and here are your SEC picks. What to make of Alabama? Where are the Crimson Tide entering week number seven? Well, currently, Alabama on a three-game win streak. They have covered in all three of those conference matchups. The Crimson Tide still unbeaten in the SEC, where conference opponents are dropping like flies around them in the SEC West. A huge victory, Zeno, for Alabama on the road in College Station last Saturday against Texas A&M, even covering as a short 2.5-point favorite. It's not 2.5 for the Crimson Tide back in Bryant-Denny this weekend. It's 20.5. It's three touchdowns in favor of Alabama as they welcome in Arkansas. So, Zeno, how do you evaluate the Crimson Tide as it pertains to this matchup against the Hogs?
I mean, it feels a little bit like a letdown spot for Alabama as far as what they did last week over Texas A&M. And really, Nick Saban has not been great in these spots. 4-17-1 against the number when not favored by more than 21 points. So there's an interesting little anecdote there. We've seen Sam Pittman do well in these spots as an underdog. 7-1-1 against the number in a revenge spot and 6-1 ATS off a road loss. And that's where he is. The problem for me backing Arkansas here is that doesn't it feel like the air has been let out of the balloon after the gauntlet that they just went through between Ole Miss and LSU and the game that they played there? I don't know how much they have left in the tank to walk into Tuscaloosa and keep this thing close. It'll be a pass for me, but I don't know if I want to lay these kind of points with Alabama. Again, they may come back to earth, slow the game down a little bit, run it a little more. You know, their defense is starting to look like a top 25 defense in the country. Statistically, yeah, they are. And so it may just be one of those ugly muck-it-up games for at least a half, and then Bama may get it in go mode the second half. I don't like the number. Don't like either side here.
So many times we talk about, Mark, and we look at Alabama, it's like they're having a down season, but they're still unbeaten in the SEC. Let's just say they pick up a victory this weekend over Arkansas. They do have some speed bumps coming up in the top 25, but two of those games are at home. One against Tennessee, then they have a bye week before they take on LSU, then they go on the road to take on number 24 right now, Kentucky. Is there a chance here in our minds that they could run the table in the SEC and be unbeaten?
I think it's a very legitimate chance. I mean, look, the Tennessee game is the all-time revenge spot for Nick Saban, if there ever was one, losing last year. And now it's a whole completely different world with Joe Milton at quarterback for the Volunteers. So, you know, that game in Tuscaloosa, you better believe that everybody in the state of Alabama who's not an Auburn fan will absolutely be back in the Tide that day. Kentucky is a fraud. I think they, to a certain extent, I can't get to the window on Missouri. I really want to this week because I think they win the game outright, and I don't think Kentucky has the defense enough to stop Brady Cook and that Missouri offense. So I'm not buying Kentucky as a legitimate threat to Alabama. So to your point, DRS, absolutely they can run the table here. Now, the real question you have to be asking in the back of your mind isn't can they run the table. Is it after running the table, do we consider them to be on the same level of Georgia, and what will Georgia look like by that point in time? And if those two Titans meet the SEC championship game, how does that whole thing unfold?
As of this moment, of course, they host Arkansas this weekend as a 20.5-point favorite. Then it's three straight matchups against ranked opponents, but two of them at home. Not on Rocky Top this year in Neyland on the third Saturday in October. It is in Tuscaloosa. They get LSU not in Baton Rouge this year, but also in Tuscaloosa. And we'll see where Kentucky is by the time we get to week number 10. You know, all year long, I thought it would be Alabama and Georgia in the SEC championship game. It might only be one team emerging from that opening Saturday in December in Atlanta into the college football playoff, unless Georgia is unbeaten, and the Georgia team that we saw a weekend ago finally, Mark Zeno, maybe looks like they will be unbeaten. So Alabama knocked off Texas A&M last weekend in College Station. Tennessee already has one conference loss. It was earlier in the year against Florida. Those two teams face off on Saturday, Zeno, where the Vols on Rocky Top are just a field goal favorite. What's the approach to this matchup between the Aggies and the Vols?
I mean, all I know is this. that Jimbo Fisher has been awful in these spots in his career. Aggies are 0-4 against the number as road dogs of 7 points or fewer. Jimbo Fisher, 2-15 straight up as a road dog, including 0 for their last 11. What do I know about the Volunteers? They're really good at home. Haven't lost at home since November of 2021. Tennessee scored at least 37 points in their last 16 home games. Volunteers are 11-0 straight up and 8-1 against the number at home the past season and a half. So everything here after the letdown or in the loss to Alabama screams like A&M is headed for that road where they've headed for the last couple of years, where they start out looking good and then stumble, double stumble, triple stumble. Next thing you know, they're headed to the Music City Bowl, and all of a sudden we're forgetting that, you know, Jimbo Fisher coaches at Texas A&M and boosters are calling for his job. So, I mean, that's kind of where they are right now. All that said, again, I don't like this spot for the Aggies at all. Tennessee is the play. I'll lay the points.
Yeah, also interesting, too, in this game, Mark, that you have Tennessee with Alabama on deck. But it's not, you know, the SEC, you can't really just overlook a team waiting for next weekend. Here, they got a 10-bell game this weekend. They certainly need to handle their business. How about the Battle of the Tigers coming up? 7 p.m. in Death Valley at night. We know it's going to be a great atmosphere. Auburn at LSU. FanDuel opened up this line, minus 13.5 points here, Mark. Now sits at 11.5, but a total that's bounced up from 57.5 up to 60.5. Who wins the Battle of the Tigers in the SEC here for you?
Well, I mean, LSU does. Why? Because you could give me the Powerball winnings, and I still wouldn't back Peyton Thorne with my money, period. Like, I wouldn't back him with your money. I wouldn't back him with charity money. I'm just not getting behind the Auburn offense. What you saw from Auburn against Georgia was more of a statement that Georgia was still figuring itself out, and it was a tough place to play. Obviously, the biggest game of the year for the Auburn Tigers, and only they scored 20 points. So let's just do some calculations here, short math here. They scored 20 at home. Okay, against Georgia. On the road, they scored 10 against A&M and 14 against Cal. They're terrible on the road. Do you suppose that they're going to get to 24? And even if they do get to 24, I know Auburn's defense is okay, but are they good enough to stop the best quarterback in the country and one of the best offenses in the country from scoring 35? The answer is no. Like, I'm not going to play LSU because they may just be so deflated at this point that, you know, there's not enough left for them to really go after this hard. These are young college kids. But there's no way you can back Auburn and that offense, period, especially on the road. They might not score 14 points in this game.
Yeah, LSU's defense doesn't stop anybody. The worst total defense in the SEC, the worst rushing defense in the SEC. And frankly, right now, if it's Peyton Thorne or Robbie Ashford, Hugh Freeze is calling an offense that looks like a service academy with how often they run the football. It has now still been 6 consecutive games for the Auburn Tigers against a Power 5 opponent without throwing for at least 100 yards. You would think if there was ever a spot, it's against a really bad LSU defense. I'm still not so sure. But LSU did show resilience last weekend, Mark, in Columbia, coming back to beat Missouri, still something to play for within the SEC, only one conference loss, and Alabama is still on the docket. Kentucky had so much optimism entering Athens last week in Sanford Stadium, and they laid a big old egg. Kentucky still ranked, Missouri now outside the top 25. So Zeno, between the Cats and the bigger Cats, the Tigers, who bounces back in a bigger way on Saturday?
I think it's Missouri. Look, Kentucky doesn't have a single win yet. If you want to consider their beat down of Florida a good win, I don't necessarily argue, but I would tell you the inconsistency we've seen from Florida this year doesn't make them a good team. Yeah. So Florida's offense isn't really a challenge for any SEC team, even though their defense is very good. But, you know, they haven't played anybody else of caliber. Missouri's got a top 25 offense in the country. They're 12th in the nation at passing. I've told you guys for 3 weeks now, Brady Cook is the best quarterback in the SEC. He continues to impress. He's third in the conference at passing yards, second touchdowns, QBR. And the Wildcats' pass defense is kind of like middle of the road. They just gave up 389 yards to a Georgia offense and Carson Beck. So I know Kentucky's run defense is very good, but Missouri doesn't necessarily have to run the ball to be effective here. And the bigger question is, do you really want to back Devin Leary, just like another quarterback that's not going to get my money ever? He's only completing 45% of his passes in conference play. Can only muster up 205 yards against a Vanderbilt defense that's awful. So what am I getting behind here with Kentucky? I think the Tigers' defense, although it's a liability and can be scored upon, I don't think Kentucky has the firepower. And outside of racking up 280 yards on the ground against Florida, you know, Ray Davis hasn't rushed for 100 in any other game. That's it. Like, he hasn't rushed for 100 yards in any other game this year. So is he really that good? I mean, I don't want to take anything away from him, but where has he been in the other 5 games of the year? I think Missouri has too much offense here, guys, for Kentucky to hang on to this one.
I would completely agree. Kentucky allowing 257 yards per game through the air. We saw the Cats secondary get slightly exposed last week against Carson Beck, who has, by the way, thrown for 300 yards in three straight games. But Brady Cook has thrown for at least 340 yards in four straight games, including 411 last week and two touchdowns, albeit two INTs, against LSU. It was my best bet last week. I'll go back to the well to look at Brady Cook's passing yards prop against Kentucky tomorrow in SEC action. So that's the Southeastern Conference. But we've got four ranked versus ranked games elsewhere around the country in college football. We preview them next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It doesn't get better than this for week 7 of the Saturday slate in the 2023 college football season. I'm Ben, he's Donnie, Mark Zeno here for the second consecutive segment. And Zeno, oftentimes in life, right, it could be in sports, it could be in college football, it could be in any area of your daily life. You set expectations for something. And if they're rather lofty expectations, sadly, things don't always live up to that sort of hype. Well, Mark Zeno, when you look on paper at what we have tomorrow afternoon in Seattle, Washington, the expectations are sky high. It's a top 10 tilt between two bitter rivals in the Pacific Northwest. The 115th all-time meeting between 7th-ranked Washington and 8th-ranked Oregon. A game, Mark Zeno, that will have dramatic implications on the Pac-12 in the conference's final year of existence, and if that league can get to the college football playoff for the first time since the 2016 college football season. And Zeno, look at the numbers. Washington is now a full field goal favorite, laying 3 at home in Husky Stadium, and the total is 66.5. It is expected to be a close, competitive and tight football game down to the very wire, and we are going to see our fair share of points. So, Mark Zeno, will this top 10 clash between Washington and Oregon live up to the hype tomorrow afternoon?
All right, let me just peel back the curtain here a little bit on my process. But at the very beginning of every Sunday or late Sunday night, I look at the entire lines of the college football board, and I pull out a little sticky note. You can't read this here. But the second line that I have written here says Oregon-Washington under 67.5 is what I wrote down. Mm. You want to talk about 3 hours of an unpleasant viewing experience and a sweat that will make your heart stop, bet the under in that game. But it is correlated to a side here, Ben, and that's the Oregon Ducks. I mean, plain and simple. If Oregon wants to win this game, okay, and I don't think the spread's really going to matter, but if Oregon wants to win this game, they've got to figure out a way to stop the Washington offense. Like, yes, there is a game script that unfolds where it's 45-42 final, right? Like, that wouldn't surprise anybody, but that doesn't favor Oregon. Not on the road, not against Michael Penix Jr. and that pass offense. I'm not taking anything away from Oregon's offense, but the fact of the matter is that Dan Lanning, remember that guy who used to be the great defense coordinator at Georgia? Oh, yeah, guess what? He's built a defense at Oregon that's built to play. They're a top 10 unit in the country. They're one of the best pass defenses in the country. If they can't, and their goal should be to hold Washington to under 30, if they can't do that, it favors the Huskies heavily, in my opinion. I think they can. I think this game is a lot more slower paced than people are going to give it credit for. I think the defense is actually show up. I think both teams will be a little bit conservative at the start and not try to take any chances and make mistakes. So I like Oregon here. Huge revenge spot for the Ducks after last year. Tough to win on the road anywhere in college football, particularly at Husky Stadium. But if Oregon can't slow down Washington's offense, the Huskies are getting out of there with a win, and Oregon's season might be over right now. So I like the Ducks here to do this stuff on defense.
Getting into some of these numbers, they're a lot of fun, Mark, in the FanDuel Sportsbook here. They have some unique marketplaces. I'm just going to give you one of these wagers that they used to have in the NFL. It's for a quarterback to throw a touchdown in each half, which means, let's just say if it was Peyton Manning throws one in the first half, in the second half, you would cash that ticket. It's usually like a plus 150 or a plus 160 ticket. If we take a look at Michael Penix Jr., to throw one touchdown pass in each half, it's a minus 550 price, which brings me up to my next comment here. It's unbelievable. Michael Penix Jr., 340.5 is his passing prop in this game. If he doesn't get to 340.5, is there a chance that Washington can win this football game? Or is it just like, let Michael Penix rip? Unless he has a big day, we can't beat Oregon.
The short answer is no. I mean, look, let's just remember something here about Washington, okay? And what happened 2 weeks ago against Arizona. Everybody remember the score of that game? It's only 31-24. Yeah, and Arizona's defense is good, but it ain't the level of Oregon good. And there should be something on tape that Dan Lanning has found that Arizona did really well that limited Michael Penix in that game and kept them manageable. Like, that's the way to beat Oregon, to beat Washington, rather, is to hold Michael Penix to 363 yards, no touchdowns thrown in that game, and you have a chance to win a game. That's exactly what Oregon has to do. So I'm with you in a sense that the simple fact of the matter is that, you know, if Oregon can't stop Michael Penix, they're going to have a very long day.
And that's the idea, right? Stop versus slow down. Michael Penix Jr. has thrown for 300 yards at bare minimum in all five games so far for UW. His lowest of the year, though, was 304 yards. If he is under, to Donnie's point, and I think it's a great correlated cap, 340 and a half, that favors the Oregon Ducks. And let's talk about that Ducks defense, because it is one of the best not only in the Pac-12, but the country. They have the fifth best passing defense in all of college football, allowing less than 154 yards per game. They haven't seen a quarterback quite like Michael Penix Jr. just yet, although I guess you could argue from a yardage perspective, Shedeur Sanders is there. He leads the country in passing yards. Right behind him is Michael Penix Jr. And Oregon's, you know, can also put it up themselves, 51.6 points per game, the second best scoring offense in the country. The Ducks, the only team in all of college football that ranks top five in scoring offense and top five in scoring defense. So, Zeno, this game will have huge implications on the Pac-12 championship race in a huge weekend within the Conference of Champions in their final year of existence. Oregon and Washington now, Zeno, are co-favorites entering Saturday at 2-1. USC falls a full dollar behind at plus 300. Mark Zeno, quickly here, who is your favorite to win the Pac-12 entering weekend number 7?
I would still argue that USC is the easiest path. I mean, they get past Notre Dame this weekend. They get Utah at home this year. You know, they avoid Washington. They still have to – I think they avoid Oregon as well, right?
No.
So, you know – no, they don't. That's right. They got to play them later on in the year. That said, I still think they have the – but they get them at home again, I think. So, point right. simply being that – USC to me has the easiest path. And if USC beats Notre Dame this weekend, which I think they will, and it's not, and Washington wins, I wouldn't be surprised to see USC jump back up as the favorite just because of what they've done and who they are and their offense and everything else. I know people are skeptical of their defense, but I expect to see USC this week play a little bit of a different game.
Yeah, let's take a look at that game, by the way. Great segue into it here. USC, Notre Dame at Notre Dame. Last week, boy, I don't know what Notre Dame was thinking here against Louisville. They went into it's a good football team, didn't have their best effort. And quite frankly, you could almost argue they should be on a three-game losing streak heading into this game. So woe is me, Notre Dame. What are they getting? 7 to 10 points by USC. No, they're not. They're favorite against USC at a -2.5 clip, a total in this game that now sits at 60.5. Cooler temperatures in South Bend, about 50 degrees at kickoff. The rain looks like it's going to hold off in some winds around 10 miles an hour. Can this Notre Dame team, which just about everybody has done against USC, open up that offense? And what do we expect out of UFC and Caleb Williams on the road this week?
Well, let's look at the offensive side for Notre Dame first. And I would argue, DRS, that if it's not a three-game losing streak, they probably should have lost to Duke and beat Notre Dame. Like, really, that's
probably
the way
right.
it should have
been.
They should probably be on the two-game losing streak right now heading into this. And look at what it would have changed had they come into this game with a two-game losing streak. Their offense, 20, 21, and 14 points in the last three games. Has the shine come off Sam Hartman a little bit? Has the offense been figured out? Is the offense really that good? I think those are all fair questions to ask, which is why I give USC the advantage here, because it's not like they played incredibly, other than Ohio State, the last two defenses they played haven't been great. And I'm not going to say USC's defense is on the level of either Duke or Louisville overall, but it's not like those defenses present anything special. So I think USC can actually limit Notre Dame here a little bit, and that offense just isn't as powerful as you think it is. I think the only chance that they have is to run the football, Notre Dame, and keep USC's offense off the field. Like, that's the way they have to win this game. They got to grind this pace down. USC's offense against Notre Dame's defense is good. I'm not going to take anything away from them, but they have not even remotely seen an offense close to this. There's not even an offense that even belongs in the same sentence as USC that Notre Dame has faced. It's going to be a world of a different challenge. If USC gets out to a lead, here's the way I'd play this, guys. USC in the first quarter. Because if they can't get out to a lead, guess what? They're going to struggle the whole game. They have to play with pace and play fast and score early and force Notre Dame to play from behind. If they do that, USC will run away with this thing.
USC, at bare minimum, the last three Saturdays has been booked as a 3-touchdown favorite. They have not covered in any of those games. They have only won by multiple scores one time, allowing the worst offense in the Pac-12, Arizona State, to put up 28 points. Then they went to Boulder. They only won by 7 as a 21.5-point favorite. I understand people would say they were up so big early on. What did it matter? Well, Colorado was the worst rushing offense in the country, only averaging 55 yards per game. Before seeing SC, they salivated at the idea of watching Alex Grinch on the other side as the defensive coordinator and put up 193 yards. And then, of course, three overtimes last Saturday in the Coliseum against Arizona. Here is Notre Dame's path to victory. Feed Audric Estime the football. Jared Parker, I'm looking at you. Marcus Freeman, I'm looking at you. You have a bell cow and a workhorse in one running back. Don't be equal. Stop giving the football elsewhere to guys like Love as a part of the Notre Dame backfield. Feed Audric Estime, and you might just turn your fortunes on this season. 90.5 is now the prop, by the way, for Estime against this USC defense, where, Zeno, we have seen regression because the defensive questions have not been answered so far for USC as they have entered Pac-12 play. It's why they are no longer the favorites in the conference. +195 following week number 3, now 3-1. It's why every price you see there has grown longer in the last 3 weeks. A big game, though, of course, in South Bend tomorrow against Notre Dame. A big weekend, Mark, as we said, in the Pac-12 that can be rather cannibalistic. So we go to Corvallis, the Beavs and the Bruins. It's UCLA and Oregon State, a top 20 tilt. Oregon State at home, a 3.5-point favorite. Mark Zeno, what's your breakdown of this matchup?
I like Oregon State here. You know, they play a smash mouth style of football. It's built on running the game defense. They're top 30 in the country in time of possession and know how to control the flow of a game. Now, outside of their loss to Washington State, they've owned the line of scrimmage, and I don't see that changing here. Damian Martin, 6.5 yards a carry, paces a rushing offense that averages over 205 yards a game on the ground. And guess what? A really good defense in Oregon State is going to go face a true freshman quarterback in Dante Moore. And once Dante Moore got a taste of Pac-12 defenses, guess what? He found out life isn't all that peachy. After a solid first three games, he's been limited in his last two against Utah and Washington State, completing less than 50% of his passes for just 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions over the course of both of those games. And he was sacked 11 times. So the Beavers are tied for third in the conference with 17 sacks in the season. They have a +5 turnover differential. Beavers are 6-0 against the number over the last three seasons when playing at home against teams with winning records. Oregon State also 11-1 ATS when playing at home in that span in general. Beavers 5-1 straight up and ATS as home favorites of 7 points or fewer under head coach Jonathan Smith. UCLA had a great win last week, but they come back down to earth this week, and Oregon State gets it done and covers this 3.5 or 4, depending on what you got at.
Zeno, 45 seconds left. Make Donnie Wrightside happy. Tell us, can Miami come back and bounce back in Chapel Hill tomorrow night?
I think yes. I want to say that North Carolina is overrated.
I'll just say yes.
There's some sharp money coming in on Miami, so it's a signal.
Yeah, like Donnie, for you.
I like it. We're back. Category
just
5.
Just kidding.
This week,
no, North Carolina minus the points. Tar Heels going to run all over that Miami defense. That's not bad, actually, at defending the run. But Tyler Van Dyke probably throwing picks. And North Carolina has displayed physicality. Mark Zeno, thank you very much. We round out this second hour up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Throw it to me.
Closing out this second hour of the Early Line live right here on this Football Friday, we go back from college football to the NFL as week number 6 is already underway. I'm Ben. Donnie is here as well. And, of course, the Sports Grid app is always there for you. Our ultimate sports betting companion app now available for download at both the Apple and the Play Store. Scan the QR code on your screen, and in a matter of moments, all of our insight and information in the palm of your hand. Donnie, you know an app that never breaks down? The Sports Grid app. I can't say the same for Twitter or X right now, so I can't even see the poll. So, Donnie Wrightside, please do the charm.
Yeah, I'm an insider here at X, so let's get after it here. I have the poll numbers in front of me here. Over 100 people have voted here, and the question was, how far will the Chiefs go this season? The four options that you have to pick from: Super Bowl champions, AFC champions, divisional round, and wild card. If we take a look at it right now, 39.5% slightly in the lead, the divisional round, which means, does that mean we don't even think they're getting to the AFC championship game? But the second line is AFC champions here at 37%. So close here. Yeah. Do we think that the Chiefs will actually make it into the Super Bowl there? Now, if we think they're going to be champions, 18.6%. For myself, I think they do win the AFC. I don't even think they're the best team, but it feels like they're going to be home for the AFC championship game. And I do agree, they get beat in the Super Bowl. That's where I'm going here. But the early leader in the clubhouse is the divisional round for the Chiefs. How about that?
Donnie Wrightside, who am I to fault you, the man with the numbers who had to lead this segment? But DRS, you forgot the stinger. You got to say, fade the public.
I'm not doing stingers until I get my own stinger. So there you go. How about that? Where's my stinger?
But now we're together. I don't have a stinger.
That's it. You're the host of the show. The host doesn't get the stinger. The co-host gets the stinger. Matter of fact, every time I talk, I want a stinger to come up before you throw it back to me. So how about that? Sheriff
Pan's got
one.
We'll try to get
Dino's
that
got one. I'm sure Blewett has one somewhere.
JY's got one.
Yeah.
Try to get that with our graphic department over the weekend. We'll talk about the Chiefs as hour 3 starts in 55 seconds.